relations between South Africa and the United States has hit yet another low. With me is U.S. intelligence analyst, retired Colonel Chris Wyatt. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, Chris, thanks. Gosh, you know, I don't know if we can skip a week, you know, because it's just so much happens every single week to talk about. But boy, Biz News' conference has got the world buzzing. Let's talk about this one.
Absolutely. Do you think that the new U.S. ambassador, Brent Boesel III, that his first public address might be his last?
No, I don't think it'll be his last, but I can tell you that what happened was eminently predictable. What's fascinating to me is I read the story by Victoria Regan in the Daily Maverick talking about the reason Durko demarched him and called him in wasn't simply for his comments at the Biz News conference, but they also said they wanted explanations for why he visited the Apartheid Museum and why he went to Soweto and why he's visiting with South Africans. I'm sorry, did they miss the part about diplomacy? I mean, you're going to demarch an ambassador for visiting the Apartheid Museum? Did you bother to read the comments that came out in the press about what he talked about South Africa's horrible history of apartheid and the need for reconciliation? I mean, he's spewing your talking points for the ANC and for Durko. I don't understand what their problem with that is. If they want to call him on the carpet for what he said at the business conference, okay, I understand that. But frankly, that's ludicrous too. Most of what he said at that conference was very complimentary about South Africa. And he talked about how the United States wants to have better relations with South Africa. But he did tell the truth that people need to know. The United States is frustrated. A year ago, the United States gave 5 asks to South Africa. And those 5 asks, not only have they not been addressed, but one of your members of your government and national unity returned to South Africa after an official visit to the United States. That would be Corné Mulder, leader of the Freedom Front Plus. And not only did the President of the Republic not take those 5 asks, he refused to even meet with him, a member of his government. A party that's in a coalition with him. He refused to meet with him to talk about this. The arrogance is beyond the pale. So this was expected. I'm not at all surprised this happened. And you see a lot of South African commentators going, wow, just 3 weeks into this. I'm surprised it took 3 weeks, to be honest. And I'm also shocked to hear that Durko would call the ambassador on the carpet about going to the Apartheid Museum. I mean, seriously, if he wants to understand South Africa better, he's never been to South Africa. What better opportunity than to go to Soweto, to the Apartheid Museum? Now, if he went on the rides at Gold Reef City next to it, maybe you could complain about that. But he went to the Apartheid Museum. What kind of nonsense is this? And it goes on from there. The attacks coming from the typical leftist commentators in the Times Live, in News 24, obviously on target, just, you know, as if they were queued up and already written before the event even happened. They just changed the dates and the event and the comments. That's all they had to change. And beyond that, we also see, of course, Fikile Mabalula, the leader of a political party, not the leader, but the general secretary. What business is it his to intervene in Durko's relations? He sticks his mouth into this once again and attacks Boesel as an unrepentant racist who hates the ANC based on 1987. Chris, 1987, he led a political action committee that disagreed with George Shultz, our foreign secretary, meeting with a designated terrorist group. That would be the African National Congress's O.R. Tambo. At the time, the United States considered the ANC a terrorist group. Nelson Mandela famously was listed as a terrorist. In fact, when he came to America, we had to get waivers just for him to come here because he was listed as a terrorist still. It took years for that to change. So to call Brent Boesel an unrepentant racist, that's criminal injury. That's character defamation. That is just sad to see. And this is a person who is a political party actor, not a politician. Fikile Mabalula should stick to running the ANC and maybe for once actually pay its staff and employees their salary. I'm sure they'd like to feed their families.
Well, Chris, relations could take a deeper plunge if that intelligence report linking South Africa to the Taliban has any credibility. What do you think?
Well, Chris, I did see that report. It just came out a short while ago from City Press. I'd have to say that on the surface, I would agree with Helmut Rohmer-Heitmann, the defense analyst in South Africa, that is probably just rubbish. I don't know where it came from. But the response from the presidency and the spokesman, Vincent Magwenya, is also rubbish. We knew that when we took Israel to the ICJ that this would happen. Really? You knew that 2.5 years ago? I don't know that it's actually a consequence of the ICJ case that someone came up with this so-called report, intelligence report. But what I can say is that many of us who are following the events do know that there are 5 lawsuits in America right now against MTN for its role with the Iranians in supply weapons to the Taliban. We know that for a fact. There are 5 lawsuits. And gee, who was the chairman of MTN during this time frame? One, Cyril Ramaphosa, and then Inkabisi Jonas. This could be very embarrassing for South Africa. And I've talked about this a couple of times in different platforms about the possibility of what comes out of these lawsuits. But it isn't one lawsuit. MTN sought to have all these lawsuits dismissed, and they failed in each case. Every one of the lawsuits is continuing to go forward. And that could be very, very disturbing. This might be one of the reasons what's or something to do with what's going on. I don't know. I don't know anything about this report, but it does seem to be something that's cooked up by an actor that really has malicious intent against South Africa. So my initial thoughts on it without further information would be it's probably just rubbish, but I'll investigate it further and see if there's any merit to it, which I don't believe there is.
Okay, Chris, let us go to the war. President Donald Trump's demand of unconditional surrender from Iran has been met by Iran's demand of full compensation and U.S. withdrawal from the Persian Gulf.
Well, withdrawal from the Persian Gulf is a non-starter, so that's not going to happen. A compensation for what? For the murder of American citizens, for Pan Am 103, for the 241 dead service members in the Beirut bombings? When it's all about compensation, Iran needs to start compensating the United States in international shipping to the tune of about $500 billion for the abuse they've heaped on people for the past 47 years. We can start there. There'll be no compensation to Iran. This conflict started 47 years ago when they attacked the American embassy, and it's continued ever since then when they've attacked our interests around the world, and they've supplied proxies in Yemen, in Lebanon, in Israel. So this is their war that they started 47 years ago. There'll be no compensation unless they want to compensate us for the damage they've done. As far as unconditional surrender, during the Civil War, Ulysses Grant became very famous and known as Unconditional Surrender Grant. His initials were Ulysses S. By the way, S didn't stand for anything. That was just his middle initial. His parents never gave him a middle name. Ulysses S. Grant, Unconditional Surrender Grant, he became known as. It's a pretty high demand. We forced the Nazis to surrender unconditionally and the Japanese in the Second World War. You have to utterly defeat an opponent or an enemy in order to get unconditional surrender. I don't know that that's going to be possible in the short term. This is one reason why I've changed my projection of how long this conflict would last. Initially, from the day it started, I said 6 weeks. And then when Trump said it has to be unconditional surrender, I said, well, now it's going to be at least 8 weeks. It depends. You're going to have to get rid of the leadership of the Revolutionary Guard, which are running the country now, in order for surrender to occur. And I don't know if they're going to be able to do that in that 6 to 8 weeks. We'll see. But the United States has definitely picked up the attacks. We've hit over 5,000 targets across Iran and finally attacked its oil processing terminal on Karg Island. Not the oil processing facilities, but the mines that are stored there that are dumped into the Arabian Gulf, as well as air defense sites there. So it's made the island defenseless, it appears. Although the Iranians say there was no damage. Funny, no damage. You see smoke and fire rising from buildings and from sites all over the island. I'm not really sure who they're trying to hoodwink here. But I think that the war will continue, as I said, for probably at least 2 months from the day it started. We're now 2 weeks into it. And it's unfortunate, but it's not going to end. Not as long as Iran continues with its abusive behavior towards its neighbors. And as I said, the U.S. will not close its bases in the Middle East. That would be disaster for global security.
Chris, can you tell us what is happening in Tel Aviv, or do you know anything about the whereabouts or the condition of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu? There is so much speculation that he is no longer alive.
Yeah, I've seen the speculation. Also, a few days back, we saw the speculation that his brother was seriously wounded in an attack by missiles from Iran, and I've seen no reports. The thing is that the reporting of about 2 weeks ago was that Israel has put censorship in place and blocked things from coming out. Given the fact that in past conflicts with Iran, when they've fired missiles at Israel, and we have footage on Instagram, on Twitter, or X all the time, every day, from people who are resident in Israel, it does begin to raise the question. There must be some sort of censorship block coming at Israel. And this, of course, leads to all kinds of rumors. We have no idea what is going on, what's not going on, whether Netanyahu is around or not around. You know, it is a very disturbing situation when governments censor information, especially in today's age. You know, it was one thing to censor information in the 1940s during the Second World War when you were preventing information from getting out, but there were limited means to get information. It was word of mouth, there was telephone, there was telegraph, and there was mail. None of that was fast, none of that was rapid. So what you get now is nothing but speculation and wild rumors, and none of this serves anybody's good or purpose, certainly not the news cycle. But there will be people out there with conspiracy theories regardless of what's going on. We see millions of people watching 2CTV, that program from the Iranian expat who lives in the UK, and he's sharing all sorts of things. I have to say this, Chris, there seems to be more reliable information coming out of Iran than there does out of Israel. But as far as Netanyahu, I have no idea what's going on, whether he's alive, dead, living in a bunker, calling directions, or sitting at a beach in Cannes. I really don't know. And I don't think any of us know. It's speculation at this point. And hopefully, at some point, we'll get clarity. It's a shame to see censorship of any sort.
There's also censorship in Dubai. Do you think Dubai can ever recover?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think the damage that Iran has done is particularly devastating to any of its neighbors. It's annoying for the most part, and it's a crime against humanity. None of these are combatants, or at least weren't combatants, and Iran attacked these states, and they didn't attack the military bases. Now they're attacking military bases, but initially they were attacking their oil facilities, their storage facilities, their airfields, hotels. These are crimes against humanity committed by an Iranian theocracy that is hell-bent on attacking its neighbors and blaming America for those attacks. Now they are attacking. We just had apparently five KC-135 refueling tankers hit an airbase in Saudi Arabia. I got to be honest with you. 2 weeks in this conflict, that's kind of impressive. And I'm not excited about it, but I'm saying that for Iran to be able to pull that off 2 weeks into the conflict, when they've been pummeled, it's really impressive they pulled this off. Number one, their intelligence is still pretty good. And number two, the fact that they still had the ability to fire missiles that actually hit that base. But I think that that Dubai and all the Emirates will be fine. What this will do is forever cement the millennia-old anger between Sunnis and Shiites and between Arabs and Persians. This will make sure that it lasts for another 1,000 years, these attacks on the neighbors. And it's unfortunate because it's unnecessary. If they had just targeted military facilities where U.S. were at, then perhaps they've been able to get away with the argument that they were defending themselves. But when they attacked hotels with tourists in them and attacked port facilities and attacked airfields where civilian operations are going on, as well as oil storage facilities, they proved just how evil they are. And their neighbors know they're evil. They can't win a propaganda war. Despite the best efforts of South African and Western press to convince people that they're winning the war, they're not.
On to a completely different topic, Chris. That reality TV couple from South Africa, lawyer Piet Viljoen and his glamorous wife, Mel, being arrested in the United States for allegedly stealing groceries over a period of 6 months. And this is the couple that portrayed Black people as criminals and thieves.
Yeah, isn't it ironic to hear the kettle calling the pot black here in this case, so to speak? Listen, I'll pay for their flights back to South Africa if you guys will take them. We never wanted them. First off, they're criminals in my book because they came here with a fraudulent asylum claim. We're not recognized as asylum from South Africa for the most part. Even with the refugee program, I'm aware of only one asylum case that's been approved. And that was because a family that actually had a refugee that was over here already and was a unique case that's not likely to be replicated. So asylum claims from South Africa are habitually denied. And so they knew full well that they came to America under false pretenses as tourists and then overstayed their visa and went and applied for asylum, claimed asylum after they were here. They're total frauds from what I can see. I mean, she was on Real Housewives of Pretoria. I mean, seriously, the conversation should stop right there, taking these people seriously. But look, I remember his quote saying he claimed that he was an unrepentant racist, something along those lines. Well, number one, then get out of America. We don't really care for racists. Go back to South Africa or go to St. Helena or somewhere like that, wherever. But we don't need you here. We don't want you here. And then, of course, they've committed, now applying for asylum in the fashion they did, it's legal, but it's likely to lead to deportation. So it's immoral. I'll start with that. Now, what they've been doing, allegedly shoplifting, is criminal. And they're not shoplifting from a local tuck shop or spaza. They're reportedly stealing from an upscale supermarket, Publix, which is not ShopRite. It's more akin to Checkers or Pick and Pay, a bit upscale there. And so they weren't exactly stealing bread and distilled water. They were stealing upscale items like, I guess, sec or champagne or something like, I don't know exactly what it was, but the point is they did this over months and months. And they claimed it was about survival. That's utter nonsense. And the reason this is annoying for me, besides the fact that he claims he's a racist, which that appears to be the case, that's quite annoying for me. Also abusing our asylum system. But what really irritates me is that this has been conflated into a refugee story. These people are not refugees. They're not part of this program. They're not part of the 3,490 refugees who successfully came to the United States by the end of February this year. They have nothing to do with the program. And this has been conflated into another story that's running around and making the rumor mills now, because News 24 ran a story repeating a Reuters story, which was, the Reuters story was about South African expats going back to South Africa. But of course, Reuters tried to turn it into an analysis story, claiming it's because America is bad and it's bad for refugees, which is utter poppycock. That's just balderdash, just complete lies. And then that's been turned into, in South Africa, the way they spoke to Leon Schreiber and 1,000 people regained their citizenship. Well, South Africa made it possible because it was illegal under the Constitution to strip citizens of their citizenship for living abroad. It made it possible for people who years ago lost their citizenship illegitimately to regain it. South Africans living abroad, yes, 1,000 may have reclaimed their citizenship, but they didn't move back to South Africa. That's a very different situation. And oh, by the way, South Africans, here's a newsflash, Chris. South Africans do return to South Africa every day. And South Africans leave South Africa every day. This is not a news story. This is propaganda that's being put into a story. There is not evidence of a single South African refugee who's returned to South Africa since the program of Trump began. Now, will people go back? I'm sure somebody will go back at some point. You know, as we say in German, people have Heimweh. They have pain. They miss home. They have homesickness in English. I'm sure that happens for some people. But when they do that, they're stripped of the refugee status and they will not be coming back to America. They forfeit everything. You know, refugees traditionally just don't go home, Chris. Whether they're from the Congo or Myanmar or wherever around the planet, South Africa now, they don't go home. And that's one of the complaints some of us Americans have, is a lot of people who have come to this country are not legitimate refugees from around the world. And we believe the system has been abused for years. That's why Trump suspended last year and opened it only to South Africans, because of the past abuse. Anyway, the point is that Mel and Pete, you can have them back and I'll start a GoFundMe, or, you know, back a buddy just to help, you know, or I'll pay outright. I'll take my tax refund if I get one to pay for their flight. But these two folks are bad examples of South Africans in so many ways. We could sit here for an hour and just talk about what nasty, nasty people they are, and not even talking about the 6 pounds of foundation that she cakes on for the show. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that personal?
Well, Chris, imagine going grocery thieving in your Range Rover. Somehow, I don't think that they will receive a very warm welcome if they deported back to South Africa.
Well, I can say this, they'll probably get a very warm welcome in prison if they wind up in prison in America. You know, prison is not the place you want to go. And yeah, I can't imagine, you know, shoplifting with a Range Rover. But, you know, it's interesting. I had a guy pull up in a Lincoln SUV, which cost about $85,000. His wife all dressed up in her abaya, her face covered, in my local shopping grocery store about 2 years ago. And I was getting out of my vehicle, walking inside to go to the Starbucks, and he rolled the window down and says, "Excuse me, could you give me gas money?" And I looked at him. I'm driving a $20,000 car that's 10 years old, and you've got an $85,000 brand new car. And the waif of perfume from the wife, who is obviously wearing lots of it, these weren't people hurting, but they had the audacity to ask me for money. And it kind of made me think of Mel and Pete when I maybe rethink of that story when that story came up. I mean, people who obviously have had life quite nice and that live high off the hog. They've never suffered. They don't know what suffering is like, but they'll know now if they're guilty, and which it seems to be the case. They've got footage of them doing this over 6 or 8 months. So I don't think it'll be a difficult conviction. And hopefully the book will be thrown at them and they'll be deported. And, you know, maybe St. Helena would be a good destination for them.
Thank you. That was U.S. intelligence analyst, retired Colonel Chris Wyatt, speaking to BizNews. I'm Chris Stain. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Chris. Maybe next week we'll find out when their court date is. Everyone take care.